Ukraine's finance minister responds to Russian forces seizing control of his country's largest nuclear power station. From London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. The International Atomic Energy Agency said the physical integrity of the nuclear plant was compromised after shelling on the facility resulted in a fire, but the IAEA said no radioactive material had been released. The attack prompted a fresh sell-off in global financial markets, sending European benchmarks down as much as 3% and oil prices to multi-year highs. After our live broadcast on Friday, I spoke with Ukrainian Finance Minister Sergei Marchenko, who, from an undisclosed location inside the country, said world leaders should be alarmed by Russia's latest attack on Ukraine.
What bothers us the most is the possible weak management of this object. For us, it's important to protect it, to save life not only for Ukraine, but for all Europe. Our Prime Minister and President had several connections today with the leaders of the world to tell that it's important to protect this particular nuclear power plant.
Are you worried about the ability to keep the lights on for people across the country?
Yes, it's also quite crucial because on that particular territories which occupied right now by Russia, they lost some power and some connection to the phones, to the internet. So for this particular time, it's important to restore this ability to get this power, etc.
The invasion has entered its second week. We've talked a lot about the economic and financial impact, not just on your country, but countries across the world. Are you even able yet to assess the impact on Ukraine?
Our Ministry of Economy estimated losses up to $500 billion, but it's a preliminary estimation because it's not easy right now to really estimate our real losses. Only after we see the last Russian soldiers give up our territory, we can look and estimate our losses of infrastructure, of economy. Now, the only way to protect our country is to combat in all possible ways. Diplomatic way, financial way, sanctions, and of course in the fields of war.
And you, together with the central bank, have applied to the IMF for more financing through the Emergency Assistance Program. What support do you need at this point?
Yesterday, we received a 1.2 billion euro macrofinancial agreement from the European Union. Also, we signed up agreements with the World Bank, which top up for 1.8 billion euro. You mentioned IMF. They now looked at the possibility to open for Ukraine a rapid financial instrument to support our liquidity balance up to $1 billion.
And what will you do with that money? How will it be allocated?
The key question that we should be able to fulfill as a government to execute our key functions, to pay pension salaries, social security, as well as army support and protected expenditure on debt repayment.
We've seen a number of crippling sanctions announced by Western governments over the last several days against Russia. Do you think they go far enough?
I don't think enough. It's a question of timing. Maybe it damaged the economy, but it takes some time to really fulfill this idea. And for us, time is very important. When I met with the G7 ministers of finance this week, I also mentioned that your sanctions should be more restrictive and more severe for Russian economy. For example, it could be investment funds could sell all possible assets of Russia, and the index can make some possible ways to damage Russian economy, to make it cancel in the index in Russian assets as well.
Were the G7 ministers open to that?
I don't know. Our citizens are suffering. We are suffering not just for our independence. Believe me that we are trying to stop Russian aggressions, which can move through our borders towards European borders. I believe that our neighbor countries, especially Poland, which very involved in this particular situation, could do to make it possible more sanctions and more military support for Ukraine, etc.
One of the things being discussed also is the United States' ability to prevent the sale of Russian gas. Are you still receiving money from the Russian government to transit gas through pipelines in Ukraine?
We bought gas, if we bought it from outside of Russia, from our East European countries. We did it from 2017. It's not a way that we buy or gas from Russia.
Would you cut off the access to those pipelines? Would you cut Russia off?
I think it's impossible because it's just transit pipeline. We can damage other countries, but I believe it's not possible to just stop transferring gas from Russia to the European countries.
We've been talking about financing for the ongoing war effort. And one of the things that's captured global attention is the decision to issue war bonds.
Yes, now we had one auction of war bonds and we received up to $300 million in our accounts. And next auction will be next Tuesday. And we are working closely with our international partners to enable them to get access to our international market to buy these bonds.
And how will those proceeds be used?
We use war bonds specifically on financing our deficit. And it's included our military support. It's included all protected expenditure, which I mentioned before. So it's just financing deficit.
Thank you so much for your time. Stay safe.
Thank you.
As Russian forces continue their invasion of Ukraine, the financial and economic isolation is being acutely felt by ordinary citizens and businesses across Russia. The BBC managed to get through to a business owner from Sochi, we'll call him Dmitry. Rather than face financial ruin and possible military conscription back home, he traveled to Israel, leaving his family behind.
Losing business, not being able to make money, this is the least fear. My family, I have two sons, wife, my mother is there, my dad is there. We're literally selling a house right now, so we have enough money to afford life here for a few months. I bought them tickets where still the flights are happening. The flights from Russia are super expensive, and there are no closed flights in the coming 4 or 5 days.
Well, with so much uncertainty and increasing pressure from Western sanctions, the question is, has the impact to the Russian economy been larger than President Putin expected? Tim Ash from Blue Bay Asset Management says absolutely yes.
This is actually seismic for the Russian economy. If you think on a scale 1 to 10 after Donbass and Crimea sanctions was 2 to 3, the market expected sanctions maybe to 6 or 7. But it appears like we're around 9. Obviously, SWIFT's been done, most of the major banks. The Central Bank of Russia sanctions were absolutely not expected. It's put a large weight of Russia's $640 billion of foreign exchange reserves kind of beyond reach. And we're seeing things like Euroclear, Visa, MasterCard, Clearstream are all closing shop.
We've seen ratings downgrades from all the major credit ratings agencies. That affects Russia's ability to borrow, doesn't it? What is that coupled with all the action that we've seen over the last week? What does it mean for Russia's ability to bounce back from these sanctions?
Unless Putin gets his troops out of Ukraine, there's no prospect of these sanctions being moderated. So Russia's access to dollars, international financing, and just trading has essentially collapsed over the past week. Russia is on the brink of default, so not paying its foreign debt obligations. Utterly remarkable. It's on the point of bankruptcy. This will really impact on ordinary Russians, and I think they'll begin to ask questions about what their leadership is doing.
Practically, what does a default mean for a country like Russia?
Default means they don't pay their debts. It takes then a long time for the country to rebuild its credibility and trust in markets. So let's imagine the crisis is over and Russia wants to come back to markets. It will suffer much higher borrowing costs for a very long time. Higher borrowing costs means less investments, less growth, and lower living standards.
Tim Ash at Blue Bay Asset Management, thanks for your time this morning.
My pleasure.
The human cost of the war in Ukraine is becoming clearer by the day. Already, hundreds of thousands of people have fled their homes, many to neighboring countries like Poland, Hungary, and Slovakia. The European Union this week agreed to give refugees temporary residence for up to 3 years in countries that belong to the bloc. That will enable people to work and access welfare and medical help. Some trains have been taking people fleeing the fighting to Germany and its capital, Berlin, where our correspondent Damian Grammaticus sent this report.
On the right, long term. On the left, short term.
In the arrivals level of the Berlin Central Railway Station, the refugees are coming in, and there is a huge line here of German families, a couple of hundred people, all with handwritten signs. Lady here has a sign saying three beds of family and children. But it's not just here, there are efforts being made right across Berlin.
Should eat some cake.
Okay. The Wardekus family have opened up their home in Berlin. They have two teenage daughters. Now they've just taken in four Ukrainians. There's Anastasia, along with her son Archemy, who's four, and her parents-in-law, Victoria and Vladimir. Anastasia's own father is trying to leave Ukraine too, but her husband, Dmitry, can't. All men of fighting age are barred from exit, something she can't explain to a four-year-old.
Keep asking every time about his dad. Where is his dad and when he can see him?
Martine Wardekus and her husband, Timo, who run an IT company, have moved into one of their children's rooms to make space for the new arrivals.
When we started reading the news, I don't know, we said right away we need to take someone in. It could have been us.
In a car park in Berlin, there is a big bus here that is being loaded up with supplies, food, toilet paper, and this is going to the border with Ukraine to pick up people fleeing the conflict and bring them back here. So it's all being organised by Tarik Alaus. He is a Syrian who fled the war in Syria, found refuge here in Germany, and says that now, having seen what's happening in Ukraine, he wants to help here.
I just remember the first time that Russia throw the first missiles on Syria. I saw the videos and I was like in a flashback to the situation at that time in Syria.
So Tarik, a refugee from one crisis, is heading to help those from another. The common thread from Syria to Ukraine, Russian aggression, uprooting so many lives.
That's the BBC's Damian Grammaticus reporting from Berlin there and in London. I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.